This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. In the last few weeks, WABE has aired a series of reports on some of the challenges facing Georgia schools at a time when the Atlanta Public Schools begin the year with a new superintendent. But perhaps the biggest challenge for all of Georgia schools is money. State lawmakers are now looking at changing the nearly 30-year-old formula for directing state dollars to local schools. And no matter who wins the governor's race in November, that discussion will intensify when the legislature convenes in January. Republican State Senator Lindsey Tippins of Marietta is the chairman of the Senate Education and Youth Committee. He also sits on the Appropriations Committee. Democratic State Representative David Wilkerson of Austell sits on the House Budget Committee. They join us now in the Senate offices. Gentlemen, welcome and thanks.
It's good to be here.
Glad to be here.
The dilemma seems to be, look, education takes up a huge chunk of the state's budget, and yet schools are underfunded based on the formula we have now. So will a change mean that schools will get more money that they can actually use? And Senator, I'll start with you.
I think it could mean either. There's two facets that will govern this. Number one is the total expenditure of how to what extent you will fund K-12 education. The second is, of the total funds available, how will it go to the schools, how will it go to the student? All education funding, if it is successfully crafted, follows the student's needs. And one of the first things you have to realize is that all students do not have the same level of needs. I think one thing that's never recognized is the fact that the cost for educating a student in urban areas most of the time is more than it is in rural areas because of the cost of living, and nowhere in our current formula is that reflected. So when we talk about rural-urban comparisons, personnel costs more because the cost of living is greater in urban areas.
So how would you want a new formula to take that into account?
I believe you have to first determine what it costs to actually educate a student, whether it be in the metro area, whether it be in the rural area. And we can't do that in a vacuum here at the Capitol. We have to actually talk to the folks down in those districts because what works in Cobb may not work in Quitman County or somewhere else. And so what we have to do is figure out what it costs to educate a student, look at that formula again, and then determine the best funding for that, realizing it's going to be a mix of your property taxes at your state, your local level and state income tax at your state level. So I think once we get a handle on that, then we can come up with a better formula.
I will say this, in terms of efficiencies, I believe we can economize a good deal in central administration costs. Each county in the state of Georgia has a school district. Some of them don't have, but a few less or a few over 1,000 students. We have high schools in Cobb County that have got 2,500 students in them. I think one of the areas we need to look at in formula is the possibility of consolidating maybe several of these different districts and have one superintendent and maybe have some local control in each county, but cut down on your central administration costs. You cannot run a centralized high school, but maybe you could save in some of your administrative costs and pool the resources in some of your administrative needs like curriculum planning, support for your teachers. I believe from a central administration standpoint, you could probably operate much more efficiently and run it as a district, as an area, maybe like a Senate seat. Some of our Senate districts have 13 or 14 counties in them. Mm-hmm. But I think that all needs to be part of the discussion.
And that would be one of those challenging discussions that we would have to have because
there'll be a lot of folks mad. Let's put it bluntly here:
that their school board person, their central office person does not live in their county. They can't walk down the street and talk to that person, so that would be one of the challenges that you would face if you looked at some of the consolidation.
The state share of funding for public schools was 51% in FY 2013, and that's down from 56% back in 2002. So a local district is picking up more of the burden at the same time that their property values are going down. So given the squeeze that the local districts face, should the state step up its share, and what would be the implications for the rest of the budget if you did? Senator, I'll start with you.
Well, I won't make any bones about it. I'm partial to public education, and I believe it's probably the most important function that we have in state government. If you look at the big allocation of dollars in the state budget, public K-12 education gets 38% of the budget. So some people can make or will make the argument, well, they're already getting over a third of the budget. We don't need to add to that. But when you look at the implications for the state's future in terms of economic development, when you look at the correlation between education or the educational level that people attain and the prison population and the lack of education, most of the people predict how many prison beds you're going to need based on your high school dropout rate. So we need to get serious about education. And in my mind, it is the number one public function that state government occupies or that the state has in its role of government. It's a question of where you put your resources. And the Bible says wherever your money is, that's where your heart's going to be also and vice versa. And so you can pretty much tell what your priorities are on where you spend your money.
I would agree with that. The decrease in the percent that the state is funding, we've tried to balance out with giving them the options. But unfortunately for a lot of the local districts, you know, the option is, you know, do you want a full-time nurse or do you want your art teacher? You know, you pick. We're not going to tell you which one. But they're saying they need all of those. And so we do have to look at where we put our priorities. If we're looking at the future and the growth of Georgia, you know, it's education, water, and transportation. Those big three things, it only makes sense that education takes the biggest chunk of it.
But let me make one comment about that. Obviously, we've gone through the most severe recession that our nation's seen in almost 80 years, and luckily we're coming out of it now. But there were four or five very, very tough years, and Representative Wilkinson referred to the QBE formula, and I don't believe anybody would say we don't want to fund at this level. But economic realities: if you do not have the cash flow to fund it, you have to make cuts. And I will say this throughout this whole process, that education was cut less as a percentage than any other state agency, and that funding was preserved much more than other agencies.
Yeah. But aren't we seeing the results of the cuts, whatever they were? Because if you take them out over time, over the last decade and a half or so, you're talking about billions of dollars that local districts did not get, plus you add into the recession, and they couldn't make up those cuts.
That's why I believe the cuts need to be restored at least back to the QBE level if it's financially feasible. I'm partial toward education because it's a priority. But I also, as a business owner, an economic downturn is not always bad. And I think one of the benefits of seeing the severity of the economic downturn, we have had – I say we, I'm talking about education systems across the state, have had to evaluate their funding and their programs, and I think they truly have cut waste. I sat on a school board for 12 years in Cobb County, and every year the administration brought a budget. The first thing they said was, this is a bare-bones budget. We have cut it. We've cut all the fat, and we're already in the muscle, and it never failed. But throughout this, I think we've seen additional cuts, and I think people really had to prioritize what true need was and what was just nice but maybe not necessary. And that's a good process to build back from, because I think we have seen what truly is critical in the educational process.
And I think that's why it's important to look at that QBE formula, because, you know, the formula is still saying that we need to fund at this level to have a quality education. Now, with the, you know, with technology and other changes that we've made to make it more efficient, is that number still what it takes to fund a quality education in Georgia? And if you look at some of the test scores, you may say yes or you may say no. But I think we definitely need to look at that QBE formula and look at what's being funded, because over the last several years, you have many districts that are going less than 180 days. I think I saw one that was around 140 at one point. Fortunately, a lot of them are getting back to 180 days, but you still are looking at larger class sizes. You're still looking at furloughed teachers. You're still looking at the fact that copy paper is a commodity that they have to ask for every day. So those are the type of things that we want our teachers focusing on, educating our students, versus worrying about collecting copy paper.
So let me ask you, and you referred to this a little bit, each of you, what to you are the essential elements of the funding formula we ought to have?
Number one, student need needs to drive that. We need to have built-in efficiencies in operation. We need to guarantee that the public's getting a dollar's worth of service for a dollar's worth of taxes, whether they're locally or state-generated. Almost all of the taxes come locally. They either go to the state government or the local government, but they all come from local individuals. That being said, I think what we have to realize is that in readjusting the formula, when QBE was set up, different aspects received different weights under the formula. That was set up in the mid-80s. If you think about the role that technology played in the mid-80s, it was not even on the radar. We need to reevaluate now what the true cost of education is for delivering a segment of education according to the student's individual need, and that should drive it. Now, that's going to be the complicated piece because we're not going to do away with teachers, but technology can drastically change the way instructions delivered in the classroom if the classroom has the hardware and the software and the connectivity to provide it. But it does no good to have technology equipment in the school if you don't have broadband access that you can access, that you can deliver it. So there's so many different facets to this. It will not be a quick or easy process, but it's got to be a thorough process if it's going to fairly represent the true needs.
And you also have to look at our student population. I think we talked about it earlier that, I mean, there's over 60% that qualify for free and reduced lunch. So as we talk about technology in the schools, we also have to think about when these students get home, will they have that high-speed access to be able to do the work? You know, do we look at just high-speed access, or do we give them discs, you know, that they can, you know, look at a DVR or something like that? So we have to look at the population. Plus, we have to make sure that we have funding streams that are balanced enough to withstand future recessions, you know, whether that be property taxes in addition to income taxes, and that we have a balanced stream going forward to make sure we can fund education properly.
Meanwhile, the state is also looking at overhauling its tax system. A lot of folks want to either get rid of or drastically change the main flow of revenue into the state, which is the income tax. What would be the implications for education if the state decided to move to a different basis of taxing people? And as we mentioned, education gets a big part of that money.
For me, I am challenged by the fact that if we moved away from that, I guess, a three-legged stool of sales, property, income tax, and you start putting too much reliance on one revenue stream versus the other, when you get to, like I said, future challenge, economic challenges, then you don't have that balance. I mean, just like any business wants to have a balance of revenue streams, I think the state would want to keep that same balance. We're a low-tax state. We're pretty much flat income tax right now at 6%. So I'm not sure what would drive it except for the fact that, say, we don't have an income tax, but, you know, it's going to come from somewhere else anyway. The key is it costs a certain amount of money to educate that student. It costs a certain amount of money to balance the budget. So if that money comes from property, sales, income tax, it's still going to come from the individual consumer, individual taxpayer. How do you get it is the question.
I concur with David in that. The number one consideration ought to be in the stability of the revenue stream.
And I believe, would getting rid of the income tax or moving away from it somewhat, would that make it less stable, less reliable, that flow of revenue?
Well, one thing you can always count on, if you ask people if they want to pay less taxes, they'll always say yes. And they really don't care who else gets a tax increase as long as they get a tax break. That's human nature. I don't think you're ever going to get away from that. But that being said, it's going to take X amount of dollars to operate state government. It will take X amount of dollars to provide quality education in the state of Georgia. Now, it's just a question of where the money's coming from. If you talk about a tax break, you've got to make that up somewhere else if all the spending levels stay the same. So that's when you get into a major policy decision. Are you going to cut the level of services the state delivers, and if you are, where will those cuts come? And so the cost is going to drive all of it, and that's the reason it needs to be a very well thought out program to really be able to ascertain what the true cost of educational delivery is in different settings.
Charter schools are something that weren't even thought about in 1985. Do you think that debate may actually be either the hottest or at the core of what the question of priorities is.
I know it will be a key piece of it. I mean, charter schools are here to stay. They should be incubators of ideas and changes. We haven't seen that coming forward. The interesting thing is that they're supposed to be leaner and meaner in some ways, but we give them extra funding, to do a charter, system. So it's one of those things that we definitely need to look at. You know, if they are truly going to be incubators of ideas, there should be some efficiencies that we can then transfer to the other type of school systems. But I think we definitely need to look at, looking closer at the results of the charter schools in addition to the results of the public schools and seeing where we can improve.
Let me jump in on that, because I think you need to make a distinction between system charters and conversion charters, which are particular schools within a district when the entire district is not a charter, and you have then a startup charter, which is basically a private operator coming in and operating a charter district. One of the complaints that I've had about the charter model on a startup model is I would love to see a charter operator come in and take over an existing district and do a apples-to-apples comparison and take every kid that comes in and see how well that model works, because that's the only way you're ever going to know whether it truly is a more efficient model. You let me pick the kids that are in my school, I promise you I'll have a better educational outcome and I can do it for less dollars.
At the end of the 2015 session, will we have a new or revised funding formula for Georgia public education?
I wouldn't say at the end of 2015. I think that would be probably too soon to go back and do something during the 2015 session and then actually talk to the people at home to make sure we get their input. So I would think it should be realistic to do something by the end of the 2016 session. But it would have to be early on so that you don't get caught up in the, the election cycle.
We need to start the process in 2015. I would imagine that it would be completed by the end of the 15-16 term.
We'll see what happens. Republican Senator Lindsey Tippins of Marietta is the chair of the Senate Education and Youth Committee. Democratic State Representative David Wilkerson of Austell sits on the Budget Committee in the House. Thanks to both of you for giving us this much time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.